The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good afternoon. Jimmy Sangenberger filling in for Deborah Flora today until 4 o'clock. Good to be with you on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Great to be with you on this cloudy and rainy Friday afternoon. As I was coming into the studio, it had just gotten so dark and the rain just pouring right on down. But that just means you should drive carefully in the car on your way as you listen to the radio leading into this Memorial Day weekend, as we remember all of those who have served our great country and passed on. I'll do some more talk in regards to Memorial Day tomorrow on my show, The Jimmy Sangenberger Show, which is program that runs every Saturday morning from 6 to 9 here on 710 KNUS. And we appreciate you joining in then. I've got some interesting stuff coming up on my show in the next couple of Saturdays. I will tee that up later on in the program. If you want to join in to the festivities today, 303-696-1971 is our telephone number. You can also text into the show on your 710 KNUS app. Name and town, if you wish to text in, please. And a couple of ways to follow me on social media. On Twitter, I'm on the Twitterverse, at Sang Center. That's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. And on Facebook, facebook.com/ Jimmy Sangenberger Pro, or just search Jimmy Sangenberger Media Personality on Facebook. And a couple of ways to connect via email with yours truly at 710knus.com. If you go to my show's page, The Jimmy Sangenberger Show, you can shoot me an email there or log on to my website, jimmysangenberger.com. Keep in mind, there's no A, I, or U in Sangenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sangenberger is easy. We don't have any guests today except for you at 303-696-1971, but we do have a lot to talk about. And I want to begin with something I know that Deborah has been talking about extensively the last couple of days. I caught a little bit of her interview with Mike Peterson on Wednesday, the president of the Douglas County Board of Education, about quite a meeting that happened on Tuesday night at the board meeting when they had a series of policies that they were working through and approving in this process, including the equity policy, which has been much maligned by folks like you and me, who've been very concerned about putting immutable characteristics ahead of other things in education. And an equity policy that was open to very concerning interpretation that led the district to do things like hire the Gemini Group to do presentations on equity trainings and so forth. And Gemini Group is a left-wing entity. And there are presentations I reported on this back when at the time of last spring, maybe sooner. Or was it 2021? I think it was 2021 now that I think about it, when I wrote columns in the Denver Gazette talking about the Gemini Group. Bad news. And there was that latitude. There was that sense that, okay, the Gemini Group is one example among others of implementing this equity policy, yet it was bad implementation. And it was allowed to happen because of the original equity policy. So it needed to be changed. And the interesting thing, as I've been noting for a couple of months, about the changes to the equity policy that were introduced by Mike Peterson as president of the school board, as one member of the board, are very nominal, quite frankly. I mean, they added a couple additional definitions, including identity diversity, but a couple other definitions, like cognitive diversity. You have different views and different perspectives. Isn't that crucial? I've always called that intellectual diversity. So when you look at what was actually changed or added into the policy, it was fairly innocuous. Now, significant because it helps to set a greater understanding for the superintendent, who happens to be Aaron Kane right now, to go and implement that policy in a way that is much better than it had been implemented before, because you have greater clarity on diversity and that it's more than just the sum of your physical parts and your skin color and so forth. You also have an expansion of the purposes of the policy. This is where there was some real interesting stuff as far as clarifying the purpose of this policy is advancing education, maximizing student academic growth and achievement, developing student critical thinking and problem-solving skills that are essential for post-secondary success. And by the way, these changes that they were putting in place specifically were talked about, some of them, the two that I just referenced, for example, in a survey of stakeholders in the community who said, yes, we think there should be an equity policy, but we need greater clarity, and here are the purposes we would like, the goals we would like the equity policy to achieve. And yet there was quite a bit of grandstanding over this equity policy change, despite the fact that it was just so damn common sense and fitting with the reasons why the majority was elected to the school board in the first place. You know, Mike Peterson and his colleagues who were in the majority who voted for this, the four of them who voted for the changes to the equity policy, were elected with the intention of just doing away with it altogether, of scrapping it entirely. And yet they didn't do that, which should say a lot about the reasonableness of this process and the reasonableness of the resolution. It's such a big deal, though. Somehow, this is such a big deal that one school board member had to resign, just had no choice but to resign effective immediately from the school board meeting, from the school board. And I have a 30-second clip of that resignation, and you could just hear how Elizabeth Hansen was presenting it.
As a Board of Education, every decision that we make should be grounded in how are we making our district better for our students and for our employees. This board is sadly failing both, and I have made the heart-wrenching decision that I can no longer be a part of it. I am stepping down from my role as a director, effective immediately, because politics and ego are the primary agenda of this board.
I'm playing the world's smallest harmonica right now for Elizabeth Hansen. Look, that was, and I write about it today in the Denver Gazette in my weekly column, Grandstanding in Doug Coe Schools. That's what it was. It was transparently grandstanding. Her public resignation is not emblematic of what the media is trying to say and the perception they're trying to put out on the left, that you have a school district in disarray. Rather, this was pure virtue signaling by one director, an apparent attempt to martyr herself for a partisan cause. That's really what was going on with Hansen, who chose deliberate grandstanding over productive participation. And by the way, her actions have real-world repercussions because it could complicate even further the effort to bring in more funds to build schools and ensure that teacher pay increases continue. It's already going to be tough with skyrocketing property taxes and the horrid Proposition HH on the ballot that, of course, would siphon away Tabor refunds under the guise of providing relief for skyrocketing property tax bills. But here's the bottom line. As I look at it, all they could talk about was process, 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 process. Because almost every change that was brought up in the last day, on Tuesday night at this board meeting where they approved the equity policy, almost every change that had been proposed, all but one, by David Ray, one of the liberals on the board, were adopted. One, they had to tweak the language and had a discussion, but they were adopted. And this was an over year-long process that this was going on in terms of looking into and getting feedback and so forth. And yet they act like this was such a disastrous process. It was unfair and unreasonable and rushed. It didn't take into account the things they needed to take into account. Okay. Back it up, though, with some clear substantiation and support. Because that is not how it seems to have actually gone down. And what was so interesting, as I wrap up just some opening comments here on this topic, David Ray on the board, he was president of the school board when the previous board passed the original equity policy. And he said, and I quote, at the meeting on Tuesday during the vote for the equity policy, quote, I was so close to a yes, but I can't wholeheartedly support this because I'm unable to ignore the flaws and violations of the process. I was close because a lot of the revisions you honored, and I want to say thank you, he added. I can sleep easier knowing those changes were made. So he said that, acknowledged those things. 7 of the 8 revisions that he requested on Tuesday night were adopted into the final resolution. And his reasoning was not a critique of the policy. In fact, if you were to watch or listen to all of what Elizabeth Hansen said in her resignation diatribe, she was not actually in any way, shape, or form critiquing the language. There was not a content criticism that I heard, because there's nothing bad, untoward, or wrong about this equity policy as it has been revised. When you can't criticize the content, all you can do is claim process, process, process. And I think Mike, I think I heard him talk about this with Deborah, and he talked about it with me for my column as well. There was a 4-3 majority. Now it's a 4-2 majority. They could have just shut down debate after Hansen's resignation and said, we're moving full speed ahead with this, whether you like it or not. We now have a supermajority. Like the Democrats have a supermajority in the State House of Representatives, and they rammed through terrible bill after terrible bill after terrible bill and shut down the ability for Republicans to push back. But the 4 members of the supermajority in Douglas County Schools did not do that. And that ought to say a lot, too, about how they actually were attempting to proceed. But here's the biggest thing that they're trying to do in the media, and that folks on the left, Democrats, are trying to do in tandem with the media. And that is to make Douglas County Schools the flip side of Denver Public Schools. Now, there is no comparison whatsoever, especially if you look at how Doug Coe has been pretty calm, pretty quiet, pretty collaborative for the most part over the last number of months. Quite a good amount of time that's been the case. But now you have this one flare-up over the equity policy, and you have a decision by the school board majority not to accept a settlement which forced them to acknowledge something that they insist is not true, that they broke the law regarding Colorado sunshine laws, open meeting rules, and the board members there say, no, we didn't do any such thing. And that's all discussion for another time. I'm sure you've heard it spoken about here on the program. But there is no comparison between the two. You have a couple of issues that have flared up. But by and large, what are we dealing with here in Douglas County is something that's pretty darn coordinated. And I don't mean like in some surreptitious way. I mean the board meetings run smoothly. They don't seem like, for the most part, with the exception of the grandstanding on Tuesday, that they've got chaos or that they're dysfunctional in the way, even remotely, in the way that Denver is. But they need a flip side. The media feels bad that they have to go after Denver, and then meanwhile you have some conservative school boards, a few of them, like in Douglas County and Woodland Park, that they just have to go after. Because in part they want to balance it out, but also because they feel threatened by the success of conservative-leaning school boards, of reform-minded school boards. And so it's just going to continue. Nothing is going to change from their attempts to make DPS and Doug Coe two sides of the same coin. But that is not the case whatsoever. And all we saw on Tuesday with this was grandstanding. I'll talk more about this and I'll probably take listener calls specifically on this topic as well tomorrow morning amidst other things that we will cover on my show, The Jimmy Sangenberger Show. But when we come back here on the program, Ron DeSantis, now running for president of the United States, and he has said that Trump is attacking him from the left. What do you make of Ron versus Don at this juncture? And also when it comes to some of the culture wars that we're seeing, Target going way, way overboard. Are you boycotting Target? Have you said enough is enough? I am done with Target because of the ways in which they seem to be, one could say, targeting youth. How do you look at that? 303-696-1971, our telephone number. We have so much to discuss today. Jimmy Sangenberger filling in for Deborah Flora as we continue here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Jimmy Sangenberger in for Deborah Flora this afternoon. That is, of course, the incredible voice of the great late Aretha Franklin's, on slide guitar, by the way, is Dwayne Allman of the Allman Brothers Band. And this is just a phenomenal cover of the band's tune, The Weight. Gotta love it. Take a load off, put the weight on us here on 710 KNUS, because we are Denver's local talk leader. Good to be with you. Our telephone number, 303-696-1971. And of course, this is the station that, along with the Centennial Institute, is proud to present the 2023 Western Conservative Summit, June 9th and 10th at the Colorado Convention Center, featuring Lauren Boebert, Eric Metaxas, Ken Buck, Riley Gaines, Frank Gaffney, Tulsi Gabbard, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, and more on that great lineup. 710 KNUS is the official station of the 2023 Western Conservative Summit. Get tickets online at 710KNUS.com. 710KNUS.com. So I just noticed, as I had a chance to go through a couple of emails that I had missed earlier, this afternoon, about an hour and a half ago, the Denver Public Schools released its 2.0 version of the school safety plan that Superintendent Dr. Alex Marrero is working on, scheduled for by June 30th. He's supposed to have it done. And they've made a few changes. I've only been able to look at the summary here of changes, key changes. I haven't been able to dive into it, but I'll just point out one thing, because everybody who's listening surely knows that there is a debate over whether or not DPS, Denver Schools, should bring back school resource officers. Without question, they should. Without question, they should. But there's still a debate going on, and decision has not been made. Not all the board members are on the record. I just know that I've interviewed Charmaine Lindsay, one of the school board members, on this station, and she said she supports bringing back school resource officers permanently, not just through June 30th, which is what's the case right now. June 30th is the last day SROs are welcome on schools, unless the board passes permanent changes authorizing the superintendent to do this, to bring them back permanently. Well, there's also the question of whether or not school resource officers should be put back on schools district-wide, or if you leave it up school by school. Charmaine Lindsay said school by school basis is what she would prefer as one board member when it comes to deciding on SROs. Well, according to the summary here of version 2.0 of the long-term operational safety plan, there were differing opinions on SROs. That is from their community feedback. After further consideration, the recommendation is for the Board of Education to make a district-wide decision regarding SROs that would apply to all comprehensive high schools and schools grades 6 through 12. Previously, in the original version, Marrero had suggested that you make it, that the board makes it a school-by-school basis, and that it is not singularly determined by the district. Now, that has changed from their recommendations. And what I am looking at here is to see if they have, in fact, gone ahead and recommended that they actually bring back them permanently, or if that is not specifically suggested. It looks like that is not clear, but they want a district-wide decision. I will delve in more into this for my show tomorrow morning, the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, that runs 6 to 9 on 710 KNUS. 7 o'clock hour, I will have on one of the two announced candidates so far running against Tay Anderson for the at-large seat on the DPS Board of Education, a man by the name of Paul Ballinger, who has an extensive security and military background, and he's running predominantly, it seems, on a school safety platform. Who better to talk about the school safety plan version 2.0 than Paul Ballinger tomorrow? Should be a very interesting conversation, and I'll bring more details on that. But just some interesting tidbits coming out of Denver Public School. Speaking of interesting tidbits, the game is afoot for the run for the presidency. You've got Don, that would be Donald Trump. You've got Ron, that would be Ronald DeSantis. And then you've got Tim Scott, just announced in the last week, running for president, senator from South Carolina. Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina. So you've got two South Carolinians vying to be president to get the Republican nomination. You have Vivek, is it Ramaswamy? Vivek Ramaswamy, I think, is his name. You've got Larry Elder, who, by the way, will be at the Western Conservative Summit, and I will be introducing Larry Elder at the Western Conservative Summit after my show that Saturday morning. So you got a list of folks. Well, DeSantis just announced this week, and quite frankly, it was indeed a disaster. His announcement on Twitter Spaces, this, think of it as kind of like free-flowing radio where people can get in and hopefully be able to converse and participate in that discussion. You don't have to call in like a radio show, except it's clearly it's technically not always the technology is not always there. Let's just put it that way, because it got off to a really rough start with DeSantis's announcement. And it was an hour. It wasn't very good. It wasn't very interesting. I only listened to like 5 minutes, and I already heard enough. But he's been making the sweeps on television more. And he was on Newsmax a day or two ago. And he was making an interesting observation about Donald Trump attacking him from the left.
And I think that some of the things he's been attacking me on, I've been a little surprised at, because he's attacking me from the left. And that really wasn't the Donald Trump from 2015 and 2016. I mean, he was a hard charger, leaning in on all the issues, very edgy on conservative issues. And it was part of the reason he did so well. But when he's taken Disney's side against me, I just kind of wonder, like, OK, I get he wants to hit me, but don't take the side of a multinational corporation that wants to sexualize kids. He's also hitting me against voting against immigration amnesty. There was the Goodlatte 2 bill in 2018, and he said that that was akin to voting against the wall. But that bill was a 2 million person amnesty for illegal aliens, very little money for any border security. All conservatives opposed it. He did support it as president, which a lot of us were upset about. But to hit me for being taking the America First position, I just think is a little strange. So I'm not sure what his strategy is, but I think he's taking positions that are a little bit different than 4 or 5 years ago.
Isn't that fascinating? Donald Trump is attacking me from the left. And I heard a dig that DeSantis was giving against Trump because Trump kept Fauci. And DeSantis is like, I would have fired Fauci, which is one of the strong points that DeSantis is going to be able to bring against Trump. There are some hot button issues that are going to work in DeSantis' favor in this current Republican Party environment, I would think. On the one hand, you have the COVID issue. And COVID was handled much better than other states in Florida. DeSantis did a fine job with that. And he didn't allow the Fauci types to guide what he would decide in the way that Trump did. Frankly, Trump did. For a long time, he allowed Fauci to guide those policies and guide his approach. And he was out there as a mouthpiece for the federal government, Fauci was. And so DeSantis is able to be to the right of Trump on COVID. DeSantis is also able to be to tap more into the anti-vax sentiment over the COVID-19 vaccine, because Trump, I think to Trump's credit, got that done more quickly with Operation Warp Speed. That's something I believe Trump should get credit for. But DeSantis is going to throw that kind of thing at Trump. Not necessarily Operation Warp Speed, but more of his support for the COVID-19 vaccine, Trump's, compared to DeSantis and some of the rhetoric DeSantis has been saying. And then you heard him talk about immigration in that clip and more. So here's the key question. Will DeSantis continue to try to stake a claim more to the right of Trump on certain issues? Is Trump going to continue to attack DeSantis sort of from the left, as DeSantis says? And is this really Ron versus Don? Or is this a little different because you have Tim Scott in the race now? Compelling candidate. You've got Nikki Haley. You've got Vivek Ramaswamy. You've got Larry Elder. You've got others that are in there. I think that you've got 4 or 5 of those that are really in the conversation on a more significant basis, just like 4 or 5 of them. There are some outliers in there, but really you've got Ron and Don, and then it's who else gets into that category? Maybe it's Tim Scott, probably, could make a good fight. Is Mike Pence going to get in? Could he have any traction? Nikki Haley is well-liked by lots of folks. I'm a Nikki Haley fan. That's the real question. Does it come down to a two-man race? Is that basically what it is? And how can DeSantis overcome it? Brett Baier made an interesting point a couple of days ago, and I want to play this clip so you can hear sort of his takeaway on that before we run to a break, because would you really be expressing some of the things that Trump is if you weren't at least a little bit concerned about DeSantis?
There has to be a significant movement to change the dynamic. Right now, former President Trump controls the environment. He controls the base, and he controls the messaging. He is spending a lot of money, though, as I noted, going after Governor Ron DeSantis. You don't do that unless you consider that person a threat.
It's a great point. how much of a threat is Ron DeSantis to Donald Trump? I have seen so many ads. I just saw one on TV just a minute ago. And I have seen so many ads thrown about against DeSantis before DeSantis even announced that he was running for president. I think Donald Trump is threatened by Ron DeSantis. I think he recognizes that he's actually got a bit of a race that he's going to have to run here. Yes, he's way ahead. He's got the advantage. But don't cut DeSantis out. Now, DeSantis has a lot of weaknesses because he's not the most personable. He's not the most warm and fuzzy kind of guy. He's not a great retail politician. But we are talking about a nationwide race. And we are talking about a run for president where you have various media avenues that can make you successful. So I would not count him out in any way, shape, or form. And in fact, I do think that DeSantis can bring a real fight. And that's not to say that other candidates can't. But it does seem like it may be narrowing more to Don versus Ron. What do you think? 303-696-1971 is our telephone number. I've got one more segment up ahead as we continue. Then, Stephen Tubbs from 4 until 7. Jimmy in for Deborah Flora here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Feeling good on a Friday. Jimmy Sengenberger here with you, filling in for Deborah Flora. On Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Gotta love a good SRV tune as we continue. Final segment of the program, then Stephen Tubbs warming up at a bullpen 4 to 7 this afternoon and evening. And I've got my show from 6 to 9 tomorrow morning, the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. In the lineup, Paul Ballinger, one of the two announced candidates so far. I think you'll probably get one or two more who are vying to unseat Tay Anderson from the DPS board in the at-large position. He'll be coming in studio tomorrow, and the next Saturday morning I'll have Kwame Spearman. Of course, he ran for mayor of Denver and is now running for the Denver School Board as another candidate. So he'll be coming in studio next Saturday on my show as well. Now, you know, when we look at what's happening in a lot of these corporations right now, you've got Target that is just some of the things going on at Target I don't even feel comfortable talking about because it's just so awkward. It makes you go, you cringe, shiver a little bit, and just disgust. Well, now Target Corporation, we have learned, is continuing to partner with a K-12 education group. This is from FoxNews.com, which focuses on getting districts to adopt policies that will keep parents in the dark on their child's in-school gender transition, providing sexually explicit books to schools for free, and integrating gender ideology at all levels of curriculum in public schools, Fox News Digital uncovered. This organization is called GLSEN. And Target has said, quote, Gilson? Is that how you say it? Gilson, maybe? I'm guessing. Leads the movement in creating, affirming, and anti-racist spaces for LGBTQIA plus students. We are proud of 10 plus years of collaboration with Gilson and continue to support their mission, Target said. The retail giant provides annual donations to Gilson. Gilson calls for gender ideology to be integrated into all classes, even math. It provides educators instructions on how they can make math, quote, more inclusive of trans and non-binary identities by including they-them pronouns in word problems. Really? Kids are failing at math, and they're not learning the skills. The data is in showing this, especially post-COVID, and you have organizations whose first concern is, well, do the word problems have inclusive pronouns? Why do we just start with they, them? What about Z, Zer, whatever those other ones are? Where do you stop? Do we have to include all of them? And is that really the number one most important thing to consider? Is pronouns and word problems? FoxNews.com continues. In another example, Gilson recommended that teachers intervene if students are making graphs about sex and gender to ensure it includes the ideology supported by Gilson. Quote, when students are creating their own surveys, if they want to include data for biological sex, teachers need to be sure they include both intersex and others as choices. Other as choices. And it just goes on. And Target is giving significant donations. And that's on top of placing this Tuckware stuff in the front of a Target. And other things that we keep learning about Target. It's a great store in terms of its product, its cleanliness, all of these things. Good quality items. Their clothing is decent. They have technology. You can get printer paper there. It's just like it's better quality stuff than going to Walmart. And it's got decent enough prices. And so long as you can still get plastic bags in Colorado, they have the best plastic bags of any store. They're great for reusable purposes. All plastic bags are. This is one of the things that Polis and Co. need to get through their thick skulls when it comes to their eventual ban of plastic bags from all stores. But they have the best at Target. And when we look, but when we look at the company, all of these things, all of these things that they keep doing are raising massive red flags and asking you, what is the real definition of Target? What is their target now? Do they have a target objective when it comes to societal changes in the culture war? Victor Davis Hanson was on Fox, and he analyzed the culture war a little bit in an interesting way and broadening in, talking about all sorts of different institutions where we see this culture war being plugged into things.
So what I'm getting at is there's an arrogance that people feel that they can say or do whatever they want because ideologically they feel they're protected or exempt. And even if that destroys these institutions, we've destroyed the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, corporate America, and the border. And I think traditional ecumenical racial relations, and it just keeps going as if it's a Jacobin or some type of updated French Revolution. And I don't think we in traditional America understand what's going on. Our enemies do, and that's why, yeah, I think they're delighted about it.
You know, it's an interesting observation from VDH, but what also is the case is you have to be smart in how you combat against this. Being rash and being abrasive isn't going to get us anywhere. It could be fundamentally counterproductive. But you have to push back. Certainly, we have seen that Bud Light has been struggling. Target is as well. Report from Fox Business talks about how Anheuser-Busch, as well as Target, have both taken a combined $28 billion hit in their market caps. Now, that's not massive, massive, but it ain't a small number either when you have all these boycotts. And it makes you wonder, why is corporate America specifically targeting a particular demographic group or ideology or something, whatever group they want to bring in, why are they targeting those groups or that one group over all the everyday customers who just want to go buy their stuff and who don't want agendas shoved down their throats when they're going to the store? How? How come they're focused on that? Anybody have an answer? We're just about out of time here. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number. But I'm just, it's mind-blowing to think about how inept they can be and why they're corporations. They're in the business of making money. I get the politicians. I get businesses like Ben and Jerry's that have already and always had a political agenda. But why is it beers now? Why is it your local Target store? And everywhere else, it seems, increasingly, all these Disney and their content. Why is it all of that? All of these companies, I don't get it. It doesn't make financial sense to me, and that's bearing out in the hit to investors or to the investment capital in the stock market. Let's go to a couple of listener texts here. Good show, Jimmy. Couple of points on DJT and Ron. IMO, no one has been through the blowtorches of every agency than DJT, Donald J. Trump. This makes him absolutely the most qualified and prepared to withstand broadside surprises from the swamp. RD, Ron DeSantis, would be ripe picking. DJT is not beholden to billionaires. RD is. So I don't know the extent to which he is really beholden to billionaires. Some of the rhetoric that I have heard, some of the aspersions cast on DeSantis, I don't buy. But beyond that, I haven't looked into to some of those aspects. So I don't think you can judge and say beholden to, supported by, yes, maybe influenced a little bit, sure. Beholden to, I mean, I know that's almost all politicians, except sure Donald Trump, an exception. But is that enough? Is that the only quality for Trump? That's a big question. Okay, he's able to withstand a lot of the issues that come up and the swings and arrows that come his way. The blow torches, as you say. But is that enough? Really? For the president, there's a lot of things, that, especially if you're a distraction yourself. If you're a distraction yourself in many ways. I'm just about out of time here, though. Let me get one more text from Alexa in Littleton. Agree, I love Target plastic bags. Unlike King Super, Safeway, and Walmart, Target bags are durable and can hold more than 2 cans of soup. Other bags rip because they are so thin. I'm going to miss Target bags. I don't need politicized agendas thrown in my face. Also, leave kids alone. Amen, Alexa. Well said. On all those points. I only go to Target if I need to. I do want more of those bags, though. But sacrifices you got to make sometimes, right? Jimmy Sengenberger in for Deborah Flora. Stefan's next. I'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 to 9, for the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Have a great weekend, and may God bless America.
Never give up. Never surrender.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.